Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we welcome you to New World next week, which, of course, you can find all the pertinent information, details, links, audio, video, and more at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, we had last week off, so again, there's so much to go over, and we will get right into it. Posted to my own MediaMonarchy.com, expanded role proposed for elite military forces. As the United States turns increasingly to special operations forces to confront developing threats scattered around the world, the nation's top special operations officer, a member of the Navy SEALs who oversaw the raid that killed Osama bin Laden, is seeking new authority to move his forces faster and outside of normal Pentagon deployment channels. The officer, Admiral William H. McRaven, who leads the Special Operations Command, is pushing for a larger role for his elite units, who have traditionally operated in the dark corners of American foreign policy. The plan would give him more autonomy to position his forces and their war-fighting equipment where intel and global events indicate they are most needed. It would also allow the Special Operations Forces to expand their presence in regions where they have not operated in large numbers for the past decade, especially in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. While President Obama and his Pentagon's leadership have increasingly made Special Operations Forces their military tool of choice, similar plans in the past have foundered because of opposition from regional commanders and the State Department. The military's regional combatant commanders have feared a decrease of their authority, and some ambassadors in crisis zones have voiced their concerns that commanders may carry out missions that are perceived to tread on a host country's sovereignty, like the rift in ties with Pakistan after the bin Laden raid. The related, James, I'll mention, coincidentally, there is a book out just now called The Command, Deep Inside the President's Secret Army, and it talks about Joint Special Operations Command. They have another secret mission, according to this new ebook by Mark Ambender and D.B. Grady, and that would be protecting the continuity of civilian government in the event of a coup. Now, fake left-right paradigms aside, James, break this down and maybe, you know, expand on just the broader geopolitical ramifications of this.
Well, yeah, that's exactly the point. Where is this heading geopolitically? Because I hope people were paying attention a few weeks ago when we covered that latest SEAL Team 6 PSYOP propaganda about rescuing the charity workers, which we were going over at the time is clearly part of a PSYOP in order to try to, you know, build up the mythos of this SEAL Team 6 and other kind of special op forces. And now we see the payoff of that. It's part of a coordinated campaign to get people used to the idea of these special forces doing things like the equivalent of firefighters saving kittens from trees, basically, in order to get the public all on board. Rah, 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 go Team America. Here's the special forces. And they're so much a vital part of our missions around the world in all sorts of ways. And they're loving, wonderful, helping squads that do great things like kill Osama bin Laden in Abbottabad. But now we see that the payoff of this, just coincidentally, as part of the, you know, a follow-up to that PSYOP campaign, hey, why don't we just make special forces a bigger part of the military and give them kind of autonomy to do what they want? Of course, we already know that they do operate in so many different theaters around the world in ways that never get reported on in the press. They only tell us what they want us to hear. But I suggest as a related to this story, how about the recent bombings that were taking place in India and other places where Israel is blaming Iran and Iran is blaming Israel? Well, let me give you a multiple choice quiz. Let's say you are Iran and you are being closed off from the rest of the world and isolated, and your exports are being systematically shut down, and your economy is being invaded, and the Strait of Hormuz is being becoming heavily militarized, and all of this pressure is on you. Would you A, not start a possibility of getting nuked to death by one of the biggest nuclear powers in the world, Israel, which has never signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and its American ally, which is the biggest nuclear power in the world, or B, would you start some bizarre, stupid, pointless bombing campaign, killing a few people in some embassy in some other part of the world, which has absolutely no effect on anything whatsoever except to demonize yourself in the eyes of the world? Clearly, this is the exact type of thing that special forces would be involved in. And we don't know exactly how this plays out. It's like the assassination of the Iranian scientists. You know, was that directly Mossad? Was that Mossad puppeteering one of their front groups, their cutouts? However that works, that's the type of thing Special Forces is actually involved in, which is why, I mean, to what extent is saying no to the Special Forces even possible, given the national security state and all the clandestine things they do behind the scenes? To what extent the public has any say whatsoever over it, I'm not sure. But at any rate, we shouldn't be giving them overt control over and autonomy over their operations, because it's destined to lead to more things like this, these types of false flag incidents that only serve to, well, heat things up geopolitically.
So Mick Raven and Spec Ops, they're basically asking for more unaccountability. And I would say that as the days and the weeks and the months and the years go by, and the real dirt about these kind of operations come out in New York Times, in Wired magazine, who helped make Stuxnet? Who helped train the people who are assassinating nuclear scientists? It pretty much always points back to U.S. real. Now, James, let's move quickly to our second story that we take from thenewamerican.com. UN may get global carbon tax on air travel to avert a trade war. The United Nations may be able to seize an opportunity presented by mass resistance against the carbon tax on air travel imposed by the European Union to extract global taxes from airline passengers, with claims that failure to adopt a worldwide taxation regime under the UN International Civil Aviation Organization could result in a trade war. The EU, which has been among the chief promoters of international taxation, announced that it was open to discussions about substituting its own scheme for a global tax. Global airlines, meanwhile, are also fervently pushing the idea of a UN-brokered solution to the impasse, saying the disagreements could affect global air travel and lead to counterproductive retaliation by governments. Skipping down, the EU's tax on flying is supposedly based on dubious theories about climate change and the alleged effect of carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere by human activities, a tiny fraction of the overall greenhouse gases that exist naturally. Let's point back to story A and the Western war machine. Critics and cynics, however, argue that the regional body is simply desperate for its own independent revenue streams. The UN, of course, has been fiendishly seeking any opportunity to impose global taxes, especially on carbon emissions. But everything from financial transactions to the internet has been targeted for a tax by the global body, whatever the world's governments might be willing to accept. James.
Yes, well, clearly, absolutely crystal clear in this story is that this has nothing whatsoever to do with protecting the environment in any way, shape, or form, even if you buy into the climate change propaganda. It has nothing to do with that, and that is absolutely crystal clear from the actions that China took in order to really start this process going, this ball rolling, because I was, as you might know, last week we weren't on air because I was in China doing some interviews and things for a GRTV documentary that I'm working on about China-US relations, and while I was there, China decided that they weren't going to go along with this EU-imposed airline tax, and the Chinese government said, no, none of our airlines are going to pay that tax. And it's not even necessarily to do with climate skepticism, although I did meet my share of people who were, shall we say, dubious about the supposed link between carbon dioxide and the supposed rise in global mean temperatures while I was there in China. But I think self-evidently, as the Chinese government pointed out, there's not even any formalization of the way that this tax was going to be used by the EU, or is going to be used, I suppose, because other countries are already on board. But there's no sense in how that money is going to be used in any way, shape, or form, in any way to benefit the environment. All it does is add a few dollars onto everyone's plane tickets when they go to the EU, and that money just gets siphoned off to be played away in the casino gambling economy that the banksters have created over there, as exemplified in Greece and Athens on fire and Italy and Spain and Portugal all teetering on the edge. I mean, clearly this is nothing more than another bankster scam, but even more than that, the global tax is the crown jewel for these banksters. This is what they're going for, and this is what they want, which is why they'll use the failure of this EU-imposed airline tax in order to suggest, hey, we've got a better idea. Why don't we just make it a global tax so there's no way to escape it? So that's why I sincerely hope that the Chinese, the Russians, other people who aren't playing along or don't seem to be playing along with this globalist game at this level, I hope that's genuine and sincere and isn't part of the trap to lead us into global government. Because as we see, China stands up and says no, so they propose a global tax that no one can escape from. So I hope that China and Russia and other powers, although I have absolutely no sympathy for their governments and their leaders or what the types of games they play with their citizens, but I just hope there is some sort of countervailing pressure against this global government push, because we know that once they get that global tax in place, global government is there. That is the crown jewel, and that's the real formation of the global government.
And this article, which again, we'll implore people to go all the way through on thenewamerican.com, says explicitly, it's, you know, once they get this world carbon tax, you know, there is no going back. The article also goes into some of the, you know, the fantastic things around the world that, you know, is funded by these kind of operations. But James, I always feel compelled to mention whenever we discuss this that even if you believe in man-made global warming, what on earth is it going to do to pay your money to the international banksters and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and Al Gore and all of those folks? The answer is nothing. James, our third and final story to me is kind of the most important story. It was covered in the newspapers. It was a covered story this past week, and it's unfortunately not new news. But for me, it's really the one that kind of calls into question everything else that we kind of talk about here in the West. That if we don't have this, everything else is just a show and garbage. 1.8 million dead people currently registered to vote. According to statistics released by the Pew Center of the States, and we provide the PDF download link for you, at least 1.8 million dead people are currently registered to vote. Additionally, 24 million voter registrations have some serious errors. While there is little suspicion of voter fraud, many people have pointed out the serious consequences of using such a flawed system. One of the biggest problems with voter registration is that Americans are constantly moving across state lines. When they move, they are supposed to alert local election offices so that their previous states can be notified. But very few actually do, and as a result, almost 3 million people in the U.S. are registered to vote in more than one state. Pew has made several suggestions that could mend the current system. One way to improve voter registration would be to implement the system electronically. The voter database could then be cross-checked against other government databases, such as motor vehicle registries or death records from the Social Security Administration. Some states are also joining an experimental program that would allow them to share voter information between databases to reduce duplicates. The digital program could ultimately allow for easier voter registration and much more streamlined registry, an imperative step considering that 52 million eligible voters are not registered to vote in the upcoming presidential selections at the end of this year. James?
Problem, reaction, solution. Is there any problem that it can't solve in a way that benefits the globalists? No, absolutely. The problem is that the votes aren't being tabulated correctly. All these dead people are on the voter rolls, all these problems. So the solution, well, hey, why don't we just give the exact same companies and people who have created the problem even more power and make it even more of a charade? No, the votes are rigged. The elections are rigged. I think we all know this by now. It's not really a surprise. It has been ever since before they started the electronic vote counting. But now that that's in place, I mean, clearly and on the record, the votes are being completely tampered with. So the illusion of democracy is dangled in front of people so that they think they have a say in their government, but they don't. To me, what the point of this is, what do we do about it? And I think the point is to expose this, and the point is to expose the voter fraud by making an overwhelming, unbelievable voter block that cannot be ignored. And they can try to suppress it. They can try to use their mainstream media to sweep it under the rug and say that everything's normal and suddenly exit polls don't count anymore and all of the stupidity that we've seen unfold over the past 12 years especially. But it will not hold. And the people, once they stand up and start taking back their government, it will not be allowed to stand. So that's my solution. Don't stop. Don't give this as an excuse to just say, okay, let's stop. Let's completely disengage and let them do whatever they want. I think it means we have to engage 100% more.
And you mentioned the 12-year mark. Of course, that's again the problem, reaction, solution. Go back to the election of 2000 here in the States. Oh, it was just such a big botched operation. We need electronic voting. So we hand it all over to Diebold, who, of course, they don't lose any money on the ATMs, but somehow votes every 4 years they just can't manage. James, we are pretty much out of time here. New World Next Week, episode 102. It's great to be back with you, and I'm glad you are back to work here on CorbettReport.com.
Take care. See you next week.